Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
Early January weather, indeed. David Schanzer joins us now, our friend, director of the Triangle Center and on terrorism and homeland security at Duke University. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Good to talk to you.
As the audience well knows, I have my own theory on my own rules as it goes to this. So Happy New Year. I tell people Happy New Year for the first month if I haven't spoken to them.
All right. Well, Happy New Year to you.
Let's talk about radicalization of service members and how common that is, and I guess we'll start with the Bourbon Street attack here. Shamsuddin Jabbar, Matthew Livelsberger, who drove the Chrysler Cybertruck packed with explosives and blew it up in front of the Trump International Hotel. Both radicals, but in a different way, right? The message was different?
Well, absolutely, Tommy. And before we dive into this, I just want to say, I'm going to try to answer your questions the best we can, but these are theories, and I want people to understand that the things we don't know about terrorism are far greater than what we actually know for sure. I think after an event like happened in New Orleans, everybody's searching for answers, why, what do we know? And terrorism is really hard to study. Most of the people who commit it end up are dead or in jail and not accessible to researchers and so on. So we have some theories about why people radicalize and what this process is about. But people should understand these are just theories, and humans are very fickle and hard to study, and they do things for reasons that are not always understandable. But let me dive into both of these cases and service members. And this is my theory. You kind of try to think about the folks who are attracted to coming into the military. And this is the way the military markets itself and tries to recruit people as well. You know, they want to be part of something that's bigger than themselves, be all that you can be, and so on. And, for some reason, they might lose interest in that particular ideology of the military, but they're still that kind of person. They still might be vulnerable to this idea of, hey, I want to do something in my life that makes a difference, that says something. I want to be part of an idea that is bigger than myself. And that might be, at least with some of the members of our military who end up engaging in terrorism later on in their life after they leave or so on. That might be why they radicalize.
You know, that really resonates with me, because I was watching the coverage of former President Jimmy Carter's funeral, and Bob Schieffer, who is a longtime veteran, said that the importance of military service to him, and he was talking about President Carter's military service, was exactly what you said, that he felt that he was a part of something that was much bigger than himself. And that's why he thought military service was so important. And that's maybe we got away from it in this country. And that's a conversation for a different day. But that really did just click with me just now, as you said that having never been in the military, that you're part of something bigger than yourself. So would the theory be that perhaps there's when a member, a service member, separates from the military, in some cases, there's a vacuum of feeling a part of something bigger than yourself, and that's why maybe they would go toward one cause or the other?
Well, I think we have to say the obvious at the beginning is that we have a huge military, and this happens to, much, much less than 1% of our whole service members.
Certainly.
So I think that has to be said up front. But we do have it is disproportionate in the number of people who engage in this. We do see a disproportionate number of people who have some form of military service in their background. So, I just think that's a possibility that there's this, they have this personality type. And obviously, you have to have something in your life where you've become disenchanted with the things that brought you to military service in the first place, and you've rejected that ideology, but you're vulnerable and you're searching for something else. And I'd say another issue, of course, is many of our service members have served in Afghanistan, served in Iraq, and not all of them had positive experiences to any regard, and they might have been very critical of the experience they had, not just the experience, but what they saw. And we could have a big debate about the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, which we don't have time for. But of course, being on the ground, experiencing it on a day-to-day basis, we've all seen many, many movies and so on about the range of experiences people have. They could have decided that the United States was in the wrong in these conflicts and be attracted to the ideology that is highly critical of the United States and American values and so on. And that's, the ideology that of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and what the New Orleans perpetrator latched onto.
So there's a commonality with Shamsuddin Jabbar and Matthew Livelsberger in that they both served at the same base. I don't think it was at the same time, but one was doing it under the auspices of ISIS. The other one was just the opposite. He was said that he wrote a note saying, first of all, Shamsuddin Jabbar was a veteran, Matthew Livelsberger, an active duty member. He said that the explosion was meant to serve as a wake-up call and that the country was terminally ill and headed toward collapse. So I don't understand how, and we can take a break and pick it up when we come back. And again, I'm asking you to go into somebody's mind that is, I don't think, thinking rationally and trying to explain the action, trying to rationally explain the actions of somebody irrational, which is not easy to do. But I just wonder why, in both cases, they would decide to express their views in the way that they did. And that goes to the basic nature of terrorism. I don't know if, when it comes to terrorism, obviously the New Orleans attacker was trying to kill people. Matthew Livelsberger, I don't think, was attempting to kill anybody but himself. We'll talk about it more when we come back with our friend David Chanzer, trying to make sense of nonsense, I guess. Director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University, 620. Traffic now, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with David Chanzer, our friend, director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University, talking about extremism with veterans and military members. David, I remember when the U.S. was gearing up to go into Kuwait. It was January before the invasion, late December before the invasion started, and I saw some Marines, big, giant people bench pressing, looking mean as ever, and they were frightening, and I thought, well, you know what, that's what a soldier's supposed to be. And I say that because when it comes to the military, and I don't mean this in a negative way, that's what the military does. They train you to kill people, right? So I guess when it comes to former service members that become radicalized, they're very good at what they do. Accurate?
Well, it's interesting. Jabbar, he didn't have the kind of job he did in the military was not the kind that you just described.
But at some point, they're all soldiers,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they get the training, and they're in that environment, and they have everybody has a minimum level of capabilities. With the Las Vegas perpetrator you were talking about before the break, I mean, what I said at the beginning about how difficult and how fraught it is to, explain and try to attribute these various kinds of actions to certain ideas that we can make sense of, I say that's an even more difficult case. I believe I was on your radio station when I was thinking that it was possible because of the symbolism that this individual might have been a critic of Trump and Musk coming to power in the next couple of weeks. And it turned out it was just the opposite. Mm-hmm. Terrorism is often a symbolic act, and I think it fits with what happened in New Orleans. New Year's Eve, drinking, a bar, and so on. And that's certainly something that's very symbolic to somebody who believes in the ISIS ideology. But you have to ask yourself, if somebody is thinks that Trump and Musk are going to help change the world in a direction he actually would favor, why would he blow up a Musk car and
in front of a Trump hotel?
Yes.
And I would ask, does it, when it comes to extremism, does it skew to one side or the other, either radical Islam or far-right extremism?
Well, it depends where you are and what country and what time of what period you're talking about. But here in the United States, certainly in the years after 9/11, and especially when ISIS was popular, and successful in holding territory and so on, we were seeing many, many more acts of violence inspired by the Al-Qaeda ISIS ideology than we were others. But that peaked and waned and really went down to close to zero when this happened in New Orleans. So the one question is ISIS resurging? We have to be on the lookout for that. In other periods in recent decades, we've seen a big resurgence in right-wing radicalization, acts of violence, terrorism committed. Of course, I'd say the peak, of course, of that was the January 6th attack on the Capitol, very controversial. But, of course, those were acts of violence for a political purpose, so I would categorize them as terrorism as well. So, yeah, another unsatisfying academic answer, yes and no, it depends.
Any way to for the military or government can predict anything? Because everybody always wants to say, you know, well, why didn't you know this? Why can it be stopped? But when you live in a free society, I mean, yeah, is there anything government can do?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, we can look. I think another thing we have to mention, especially with the Las Vegas incident, is, you know, we have a lot of service members who were veterans and, you know, they're suffering from some form of trauma from their experience. And trauma can lead you to do, you know, all kinds of things and be very confused. And that doesn't necessarily have to do with politics, even if some of what they said or the notes they left have some political intonation. So lots of what happens with these individuals could be because of a sickness, a mental sickness, or some other type of ailment. So, I don't think we're going to get the kinds of answers that we would like to have for either of these two incidents.
Thank you, David. Appreciate your time. Insights, as always, David Chanza, director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University. We'll take a break. Come back Thursday morning. We'll talk with Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Time now, WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan.